Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity, episode 383. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan. Joining me today, as mostly always, John Raridan.
Howdy, everybody.
You almost didn't make it because your air conditioner broke in October, and like you'd think that'd be fine, but I can sympathize. It was in like the 80s during the day today. It sucks.
It was, yeah. So this past, like, it broke on Friday night, and then this weekend, pretty much until today, I think it cools down tomorrow now that it's fixed. It's been like 90 degrees every day because A, climate change, and B, also just not out of the character that much for Iowa. It's weird weather here. Kind of just, there's no fall, there's no spring. We go straight from summer to like dead of winter in a course of a week. So this, like next weekend, the high is like 50. But yeah, I got a new air conditioner and it's very exciting. The thermostat connects to Wi-Fi. I can control it from my phone. And I have like no money anymore. I spent all my money.
So we got Google, actually, pro tip to homeowners. There was something with Google where you could just like get a free Google Nest. But because my house is old, we could not get the Google Nest to actually work right with it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It'd be the kind of thing where it'd be like the Google Nest, we'd have it like set to, you know, like 67 degrees. And then it would just be like, now it's 80. And it's like, no, Google.
Oh, jeez.
So now we just have like a Honeywell, which is fine. It's just not as fancy as the app controlled Wonder.
Yeah. Yeah. No, this is I'm very excited, mostly because I can mess with the temperature while my wife is home and I'm not, just to confuse her.
Also, here is Alex DeFreitas. Alex, yeah. Do you have any air conditioning woes? How's the weather in Texas?
No, I'm well. In the summer, it was pretty awful because every day was like triple digits up until the tail end of August. And so my electricity bill for the month of August sucked. Things are turning around slowly but surely. I live in an apartment, so I don't have to deal with any of this shit.
That is my advice for if you do buy a house that has central AC, is keep your old window AC, because that saved me over the weekend, was breaking out the old window AC from my old apartment and being like, you are now in charge of the house, tiny little window AC. Good luck. Oh. Final air conditioning story on our Nintendo podcast. So the guy comes out to like find out what's wrong, and he goes to look at the like the compressor unit, like but the big air conditioner thing behind the house. And he's like, let's see, figure out if we can like see how old this one is. And he looks at like the design of it. And he's like, okay, it's at least 30 years old because of the shape of it. Like they don't make them that shape anymore. And he's like, so let me look at the serial number and see if I can figure out exactly when it's from. And he looks at the serial number, and the serial number, which normally a serial number is like a string of many numbers, maybe some letters if you want to get fancy. The serial number on my air conditioner was 51. Just 50. It was the 51st air conditioner ever made. And he's like, I've never seen that before, and I don't know what that means. And I'm like, good.
Hmm. And then we've video games.
Oh yeah, that thing. You guys don't just want to have a home improvement podcast?
Imagine owning a home.
Yeah,
couldn't
Alex,
be me.
You can
in
dream.
This economy.
You missed it. Just wait for the next pandemic. That's when the interest rates.
Yeah,
really
I'm waiting for it.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We're talking about hot Nintendo Switch homeowner rumors, the interest rates that maybe
yes.
are going to go down. I heard in the next World Direct,
yeah.
Joe Biden's going to announce that interest rates are down on houses.
God, that would be the best. That's how the State of the Union should work. It should be like, boop, boop, doop, boop, doop. And then like Joe Biden comes out and he's like, we're bringing State of the Union directly. And he like does the hand things. Maybe he's holding a banana.
Just like, guys, we're missing, or like we're bringing back a long dormant franchise, World War III.
Finally, finish the fight.
Yeah.
Happy home designer, house in crisis.
Yeah. God, that'd be amazing.
But one game came out last week that I'll admit was not on my radar. I had heard very good things about it. The game is Cocoon, which is published by Annapurna Interactive. My mind is escaping me on what the the name of the team is now, but it's like the lead designer from Limbo and Inside. Two games that I think are fine, but the body horror elements, especially of Inside, is something that I was like, I like the design of this game, but
Inside gets weird in the back half. I mean, it's great, but it gets weird.
Yeah,
I definitely dropped that game because it was too much.
Yeah,
that's totally fair.
But that's also, I mean, like, because of, like, I think Limbo's fine. And Inside, like, I know people love it, but it just wasn't totally for me. So Cocoon, people were raving about it. I know Alex Arona and Joel DeWitt, they played it at Summer Games Fest, and they dug it a lot. Alex actually wrote a review. He gave it a 9.5. Pretty much the only knock against it is that the Switch version is imperfect, which that is also the version that I'm playing, although I will say it is on Game Pass, folks. So,
yep, I am adding it to my play later list right now because I forgot about it.
Yeah, it is a tremendous video game. Just one of the most, it's a very clever puzzle game that also does not, like, treat you like shit. Mm-hmm. It's a puzzle game that'll, you know, pick you up if you're drunk. Like, that's how I feel about Cocoon so far. I'm near the end. It actually marks the game in percentages as you play through it. You can go, like, load back and, like, go back to, like, 20%. I'm in the 80s now.
Broke into the 80s. I'm at, like, 82%.
Yeah, I think that might almost be exactly where I am. Maybe, like, nice. One or two past that. But the premise of the game is that you're controlling this bug character. There is virtually no explanation about what any shit in this game means. But the hook of this is that you are solving these different environmental puzzles. You really only have one button for interaction, but you have these orbs that you pick up. And in these orbs are give you some sort of ability. One of them will make, like, some platforms turn into clouds so you fall through them or jet up them. Another one will let you walk over paths. It, like, reveals paths that you can't see, and you can walk over them when you reveal them. And these orbs, you can also jump into them, which makes it this weird nesting doll of a video game where every orb kind of has their own world that you're progressing through. And in order to be able to move that orb, like, take it to other areas, you need to beat a boss in very clever and enjoyable boss fights. And going back to why this is a puzzle game that treats you kindly is that because of the whole loading point, like, how it goes in the percentages, like, everything is very segmented, even if it's, you know, it's a linear game, but it does not feel that way when you're playing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a flow to it, and it does things where it's like, okay, like, you need to get something in this area before you go back out, so we are going to block this off. So go do that and then come back. And it basically does a good job of limiting the options of what you can mess around with, so you know that, like, there's something that you're missing. And there are times where I've been like, what could I possibly be missing? And then because of the way that the game funnels you into certain areas, you kind of, you just need to figure it out. It doesn't have any kind of hint system, but it's just the design of the game is friendly to making these complex and kind of deep puzzles, one, make you feel very smart, and two, never make you feel totally lost.
It's very Super Metroid in that it's guiding you through the level design and never telling you anything, but you are just naturally figuring it out by just messing around with the mechanics. And it's introducing a new idea, like, every 5 minutes. It never sits on one thing for too long. And then it'll remix it, and then, you know, you'll hop into a new orb, which has its own world, which has its own thing going on. And the pacing of it's just, it's excellent.
Yeah, it's almost like there's part of me that wishes it would linger longer on some ideas, but usually those ideas are brought back later on, and then there's more twists added to it. And I've heard that the finale is phenomenal. Like, this is there's that the Topsters 25 game thing going around online.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cocoon's on my list. Excitebots, you're out. Cocoon, aww, you're probably in. Excitebots was the last one on. Like,
oh man. Now I'm going to play Cocoon specifically going, is this better than Excitebots? Like, nothing else. It's just Cocoon versus Excitebots.
Yeah, I find that the last, like, five slots in my top 25 are very fungible. You can just move anything around
in
there.
It's also, like, I don't know, I side on the games have just continued to improve. Yep. I feel like our game clubs have revealed atrocities to my memory of video games.
come preview of coming attractions. Yeah.
I mean,
series of atrocities.
No new Super Mario Brothers game was going to be on my top 25, but I think if I did a top 25 2 years ago, like Wind Waker and Ocarina of Time are probably on it, and now they are not.
Now New Soup is going to be in your bottom 25.
Honestly, yeah, New Super Mario Bros. I was ready for it to not age well, but holy crap, that game is bad.
They are slow and boring games.
Like the physics feel horrible. Yeah, I mean, we'll get to it. Is that next week that we're doing that? Okay,
I think so. I don't know. We got.
We'll find out.
We're running out of time. We are by the time this episode comes out, 2 weeks until Wonder Boys.
Woo! That's exciting.
Yeah, Cocoon's incredible.
Did you already say how long it was? Like, do you know?
I think I heard people say 5 to 7 hours. I don't actually know how long I've been playing it, but I don't think I've hit 5 hours.
Okay.
And I am, you know, I've got like 15% of the game left.
Cool. I like a game that I can finish in like 2 or 3 sittings. That's great.
I mean, that's what, at this point, I've really only had like 3 sittings with it. It is the rare Switch game that I'm playing on TV.
Does it look good? I mean, I know like Alex Arona mentioned some performance issues. How does it look?
Takes a long time to load. Doesn't run flawlessly, but it's fine. It's totally fine.
Okay.
Play it on the TV.
What's the hopping between the worlds like? How long is that loading? Because it has to be instantaneous for, I don't know, like,
it's not
for
bad.
Some of those puzzles. Okay.
Whatever it is, it's the initial load takes a while. But I haven't been irritated by any loading.
Okay.
In the actual game, it's the usually the couple times that I booted it up, after the first time where I'm like, how long is this going to take to load? Then after that, I just boot it up, set my Switch down, and I go do something else, and then come back to it and be like, oh, it's loaded up, let's go.
Yeah, the nesting dolls effect is very important to how that game plays. So if the loading was between that was long, then
I feel like all I can say about that is that it hasn't bothered me. Which, I mean, maybe if I play this on Xbox, I'll be like, oh wow, this is, you know, it's a half a second instead of 1 second on Switch, but it has not bothered me.
Cool. Yeah, I'll probably I will try game. It on Game Pass.
It was not on my radar at all. I was streaming Oxenfree 2 with Joe, and Soren messages me and Matt and says, do you guys have Game Pass? I just played Cocoon for 2 hours, and it might be one of my the greatest games I've ever played. And so it was from a recommendation like that from Soren, friend of the show, who's been in the industry as a producer for what, like a decade now?
She's does thinky games.
Yeah, and stuff. She does puzzle and games. So
Cocoon is thinky game.
Yep. It's like, okay. If this is clicking for Sered in this way, then I at least need to give it a shot. And it is incredible. I think the one thing I knock against it is just a personal issue. Is like there's nothing else outside of the puzzles for my brain to glom onto. Like if there is a story and Sered says that she did pick up on some sort of narrative, I'm not catching it. It's very abstract.
It is very abstract.
And I think it's very neat. Like the visual and the sound design's cool, but outside of the puzzles, this game isn't offering my brain much.
I feel like it is. If you've paid attention to me talking about video games over my story career here, I'm all vibes, baby. And guess what Cocoon's got? It's got vibes out the yin yang. I don't need to know why this bug is doing what it's doing. I'm on board. I mean, I could lean into my tropey English major bit and be like, seems Kafka-esque. but like, there definitely is, like, there's something going on. Maybe it'll all come together in the end and it'll be a little clearer. But definitely, like, I mean, I don't need it to be more than this. I look to like Limbo as, you know, this developer's other work. Like Limbo, I almost wish Limbo didn't have a story.
Yeah, I do like, I like the way, I always liked Inside better than Limbo, but I really liked the way it presents. Like, it doesn't spell anything out for you, but there's plenty of environmental. I mean, once again, Alex compared to Super Metroid earlier, but I think that does the same thing of like, you could play Super Metroid and think there is no real plot in that game. And then you play through it paying attention to all the background details and you go, oh, there's a ton of plot in this game.
And I'll say if we are, I mean, I think the comparison of Cocoon to Super Metroid is weirdly apt. Cocoon is not a platformer. But as far as like how that game guides you.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing is that I think Super Metroid is, if you're paying attention, it's explicit. Cocoon, if you're paying attention, it is not explicit.
Sure,
it's still very, very too subtle, maybe, but it does not bother me at all.
Sure.
It's still an excellent game.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Alex, you mentioned Oxenfree 2, that you were streaming that. So I got Oxenfree 1 very cheap years ago on Switch. It's a game that I have installed, and I keep on thinking about playing it. How is Oxenfree 2? And is it worth going through the duology?
Absolutely. So Joe and I played Oxenfree 1 last year. He introduced it to me. We were doing like the spooky October streams, and he wanted to do some co-op streams with the rest of us, me, Matt, and Xander. And we did Oxenfree, and I loved it. For those who don't know what the Oxenfree games are, they're narrative. You're walking around this island solving very light puzzles. Like I hardly would even call them puzzles. You're tuning a radio and to catch like ghost frequencies. The puzzles are not the point. The point is the story and the characters and the vibes. The vibes are immaculate in the Oxenfree games. There's this very like haunting synth music in the background that's incredible. The ominous sound design of the ghost stuff is really good. And then the thing that carries these games is the dialogue. It's very natural. It sounds like how people would speak, and the voice direction and acting is stellar, and supports that dialogue wonderfully. You are choosing your dialogue almost in like a Telltale like fashion, where you have a little bit of a timer and you have to choose between some options to react to what the other characters are saying. And depending on what you say, that might affect events in the story. I don't want to like get too much into the story, but it is a horror game that is less about the horror and more about the drama going on with the characters. It kind of reminds me of like a Mike Flanagan show in that way. And the stuff in Oxenfree 2, for whatever reason, and when Joe and I were talking about this, I think it made sense, is that because these characters are more adult, I relate to them on a way that I didn't with the Oxenfree 1 characters, because those characters are all teenagers. There's a lot of like melodrama, a lot of relationship dynamics at play there that I'm just past that. So Oxenfree 2 being about like these two adults, working adults, who are kind of like in a point in their life where they're a little aimless and trying to figure out what's next for them. That resonated with me a lot. In fact, I got pretty emotional towards the very end of this game. And I won't spoil too much about the story itself, but the characters, Riley and Jacob, the protagonists, they're just a really good duo. Jacob is like this awkward, very talkative. He's like, he knows a lot of stuff, but he's very, I don't know, either anxious or nervous. Just generally awkward, kind of eccentric kind of guy. And he's talking mostly just to fill up the space because he's very scared about what's happening, because all this ghost stuff is happening on this island. Or I don't think the second one takes place on an island. It might be just off the island of the first one. And then Riley, who is the character that you're playing as, is very no-nonsense. She's very tired. She's had all these life experiences, and she's kind of done. She just started this new job, and she's done with the bullshit, but she's not humorless. And so they have a really good rapport between the two of them, where Jacob will say something ridiculous or random, and then Riley will like just either play along or tell him to shut up. Like it's a very fun dynamic, and there's some incredible writing and dialogue in this game. So in an effort to not want to spoil too much about the plot, I'll just say go play it. It's very good.
Yeah, I would assume I should play the first one before I were to play the second one, right?
Yeah, so I don't think it's Oxenfree 2's story is separate, but there are ties that would make the most sense if you do play the first one as well. So
yeah,
and these yeah, are also like shorter
it's
games.
Interesting hearing you talking about the characters in 2 resonating more with you, because I feel mm-hmm. Not that I've like read a ton of reviews about Oxenfree 2, and maybe I'm just conflating this with what Joe's review on the site was, but people seem to like the cast of 1 more than 2. And it seemed like the fact that the cast of 1 isn't the main cast in 2 was mm-hmm. a little bit of a disappointment to some people. But hearing you talk about how it's, you know, you go from like teenagers to people at a different stage of their life.
Yeah.
That makes it seem, I mean, it's like they're sticking in the same universe, doing the same kinds of spooky things, but featuring different people in those roles. Honestly, you comparing it to Mike Flanagan shows might be the what I need to go play it, because, dude, House of Usher, like,
in a, oh, I'm so soon, excited for
very
that.
Soon.
I was just checking for the release date for it.
When
is
it?
It's the 12th, so we're still okay. Like 9 days sweet. Away.
Yeah,
like a week and some change. Yeah, very very stoked for that. I think it's like it's that very well-written dialogue, and that every now and then a character will have a moment to shine and they'll have this speech and you'll be like, oh, this is cutting into me. Like I'm feeling things all of a sudden. And by the end of the first stream, because we did 2 streams for this, I felt like, oh, Oxenfree 1 is better, because not only are the characters, there's more characters in the first one. There's this ensemble cast, like they're all playing off of each other in different ways. And Oxenfree 2 is laser focused on Riley and Jacob. There are other characters that you meet along the way, but it's really about those two. And so that was something that I was missing in my first stream. But when we got to the latter half of Oxenfree 2 and it really kicks into gear, like it pays off for those two characters in ways that I was not expecting. I was not expecting to resonate so strongly with. So out of the 2, 2 is my favorite.
Awesome.
I also played Final Fantasy 16.
What did you think about the, I heard Final Fantasy, did you finish Final Fantasy 16?
I did. I beat it. I beat it last night, actually.
What are your takes on, or what is your view on, I know people think that the story falls off a cliff in the back half.
Yeah, it really does. This game was like, competing with Baldur's Gate and a little bit with Tears of the Kingdom for me, like as maybe best game of the year. After getting into the back half, that story falls apart. Those characters fall apart. The side quests get ridiculous in how many they throw at you, considering like it's an action game and it's some of the most pristine, best action combat I've ever played. And I know that a lot of people say that it's easy. But as somebody who sucks at action games, it's probably the reason why I love it so much. It's very empowering.
Yeah, I mean, also, I will always, especially with Final Fantasy, I'll take this. Final Fantasy VII is an easy as shit video game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not difficult. Okay, the bosses, maybe they're tricky. But, like, the RPG that everybody loves is probably one of the easiest Final Fantasy games. Like...
that might be why people like it so much.
I mean, I do think it is. I think the fact that Final Fantasy VII is a very basic pitch RPG is why it gets a lot of love. And I say that as someone who really likes Final Fantasy VII. It's just that replaying that on Switch a couple years ago, I'm like, oh, like this is just like there's no like Final Fantasy VIII is weird as shit. But VII is just like we took like the vanilla aspects of prior Final Fantasy games and just put it on easy street. But anyway, but 16, like the combat just, it's fun.
It's so
fun
good.
To mess around with it. And I mean, I only got a couple hours in until I was bouncing between that and Miles Morales, and those combat, like those games control similar, but different. I think I've mentioned it before about how, like, I think dodge for one of them is on R1 and on circle on the other. So I realized I had to commit to one. And Miles Morales, very good video game, but kind of stoked for Spider-Man 2. I don't know when I'll get to it, but I mean, I think people are very high, and I think review copies are in the wild for that. But yeah, Final Fantasy 16 is a game I want to go back to, but I already can see the cracks of the foundation of the story. And I just know that it's going to reach a point where I'm just in this to boom, boom, smashy, smashy, and not caring about where it goes.
Yeah, there was a moment where I was like, you know what? Screw all these side quests. I'm beginning to hate the way this game is handling its own pacing, because an action game, those games are typically what, like 12 to 20 hours meant to be like replayable.
Bayonetta is what, like 15 at the moment? Like
Bayonetta 3 is impossibly long. Because I haven't finished it. It's too long, however long it is. Yeah. It's probably not actually very long, but God, is it
probably
boring.
It's probably 20 hours, and I feel like a lot of those games hit the 10 to 15 mark. And I know, like, the Devil May Cry 5, like, combat designer, I think, worked on this, and it shows.
Yeah.
Well, a JRPG is allowed to be, like, 50 to 60 hours, because typically you have a pretty large cast, a lot of systems at play.
Yeah,
like there's a lot of progression and stuff that where there's plenty of carrot on the stick stuff to let you want to wander around the world and do side quests, and those things are rewarding because they're fueling the stuff that is going to pay off in boss fights and whatever. Final Fantasy 16, you really have none of that. It's a game about Clive. You have party members that show up every now and then, but you can't invest in them. You can't mess with their abilities, you can't mess with their stats or their equipment. They're just kind of along for the ride, and it throws the pacing off a whole bunch when you're doing all these side quests and you're not getting any sort of reward or benefit from it. And they're very just mundane shit. Like, it's just a fetch quest or talk to characters. And some of it's enriching the world building or whatever. And the world building is a little, it's kind of confused. There's a lot of stuff about the story that's very confused. I really enjoy the aesthetics of Final Fantasy 16 and how it presents itself. It's a very mature game in more ways than just like, oh, it's very bloody and they say fuck.
Yeah,
like
that one girl wants to have sex.
Like one girl wants. There's, but also like the characters are adults. It's almost and they act like adults. There's very little like anime-isms in this game. It really does feel like a Western dev made this game until like, you know, a character spirit bombs another character in a big summon fight. You're like, oh, okay, yeah, this is anime as shit sometimes. But outside of that, like the substance of it is very weak. Like it's mature in the veneer only. Like beneath it is still a pretty basic Final Fantasy story. So I don't know. I was very high on this game when I first started. I still think it's a very love
good first impression.
Yeah, very strong, especially after you get through the prologue and like the Game of Thrones stuff kind of falls off and it begins to have its own identity. Basically, when Cid shows up,
Cid's
the game picks up. Yeah, the best Cid in the franchise for sure. And there are some other characters that I like a lot. Clive and Jill are two pieces of cardboard. I don't know.
I still go back to like the end of the prologue where like Clive's just an idiot. What happened to my brother? You did, asshole.
Yeah. I think that for me that works a little bit because it's supposed to be the audience knows, but the player does or the character doesn't. And watching his journey go on for them.
It's at least for me, and granted, you know, I haven't gotten to the end of the game. He just seems like an idiot by not picking up on that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's just like a storytelling problem. Like the way they wrote that moment in particular is very confused. I looked up on Reddit, like, okay, explain this very particular part of this scene because something is not adding up. And I won't mention it here because spoilers, but yeah, that scene is like incredibly pivotal. It's the inciting incident. And also it's so not confusing. Really well told. Yeah. It's very confused. But that game is still, I still really enjoyed the combat and the big icon fights for as dumb as they were sometimes. They did drag on a little bit too long.
I mean, I've only run into like two of them, but they are overlong.
Yep.
John, outside of air conditioner replacement, have you been playing anything? Looking forward to anything?
I mean, I continue to play Starfield and I've been bouncing back and forth between that and Jedi Survivor because I kind of forgot. Jedi Survivor came out right before Tears of the Kingdom.
Zelda.
Yeah. And so I bought it and started it and then never finished it. And then I was playing Starfield and was like, boy, spaceships are cool. You know what else has spaceships? it also sits right next to it on like my Xbox library because of alphabetical order and the word star. So yeah, I'm bouncing back and forth between those two. Starfield is still probably like my very personal, specific niche game of the year. Jedi Survivor's, that game's great.
Yeah, we were talking about it where my library has a PS5 copy that I aspire to take out in the near future. Well,
and the fun thing about Jedi Survivor is that buried beneath the discourse about like how well the game runs or doesn't run, like both the console versions are great.
It's the PC version.
It's just the PC version is broken and terrible. But like Xbox, PlayStation, yeah, those versions are great.
Is it still broken and terrible?
On PC, yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah,
like play it on a console. They are apparently doing a PS4 and Xbox One port. That'll be interesting. On the bright side, because they did that, they were also able to improve the performance of this version because they were like, "Hey, we got all these optimizations ready for that version. We're gonna backpatch them into the series and PS5 version. So like now the 60 FPS mode on this one is even better."
Awesome.
So like that's
I really neat. Especially after Ahsoka wrapped up literally right before we recorded this, I need my Star Wars fix. That game will do.
Yeah, no, it's great. Other than that, I don't think I've played anything. I am in the background of this podcast playing the new level in Whisker Squadron. Which is fancy and it's like a green cityscape.
I hope that comes to Switch eventually.
I think they would like it to.
Yeah.
Nintendo, I won't say listening. More than that because I don't know what I'm supposed to say publicly and what I'm not, but like I think they would very much like it too. And hey, Nintendo, reach out because it seems like this game's getting a lot of buzz and positive reception, and boy would it look good on your system.
I mean, it's the age old like, hey, this looks like Star Fox. Yeah, somebody should make one of them.
Yep. Well, we're already getting, on the bright side, we are getting Exodiac on Switch.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, that was announced like a year ago.
Okay. So much I pay attention. I just know you've spoken highly of that. That game looks good.
Yeah, Exodiac is so good. Like it's much more like Star Fox kind of by the numbers. Like I don't think this is not a burn, but it doesn't do as much like different. It kind of is just like, hey kid, do you like Star Fox? Here's that at a really high production quality, and it's great. With like a little bit of Space Harrier mixed in for good measure. Whereas good. Whisker Squadron Whisker Squadron is like actually doing like cool and different stuff, which is really neat. They're both good. I did also, I haven't started it yet, but I downloaded the demo for Another Crab's Treasure, which
is
I believe
only is on Steam.
Yes, it's part of the Steam Next Fest. It's there until like the 16th.
That game looks very good.
I'm excited to try that.
I still think it's hilarious that they have the mode where the crab just has a gun.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm probably play that this week. And then I think next week, the game that my sister is an executive producer on is also has a demo on the Steam Next Fest, Earthless, which finally has a gameplay trailer, which no shame to them, but they should have led with the gameplay trailer. It's way more interesting than their cutscene trailer they announced it with. But it looks It's like a little bit Oregon Trail, a little bit Fire Emblem, and a little bit Star Trek.
Yeah, and as we sit here, October 3rd, I'm in anticipation of Wild Card Football, which will be the first NFL video game. It only has a note. It does not have the NFL license. It has the NFL Players Association license. So it has the players, not the teams in the stadiums. But it's still, it will be the first NFL licensed video game on a Nintendo system since 2012.
Huh. Well, you know, at least we got something.
Yeah. Yeah. It could be a fun arcade game. I do have in the back of my mind that it is in the same line as NBA Playgrounds, which was like an earlier Switch release. I believe I reviewed the first one and it wasn't great. They did like a huge update to it because it was so bad. There were things to like about that game. It just did not work out. I hope that Wild Card Football is better off the bat. I would like to play as Packer players in that game. I mean, players that legally are in the NFL Players Association that may or may not play for the Green Bay Packers.
Right.
But I'm hoping that I should have a cool feature next week about
the fact
that this is the first NFL licensed game in like 11 years. I reached out to some of my old pals because I was the one dude who covered Madden on Wii. Reached out to some people who worked on Madden on Wii to get them to talk about, like, reflect on that and, you know, talk about what it's like seeing this game kind of do a little bit of what they were doing on Madden Wii with doing, a more cartoony art style. So hopefully I'll hear back from that and that feature will be cool. If I don't, then that feature probably won't happen if I don't get interview responses.
That would be such a fun documentary project to do. Madden. Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, did hear back response from one of the guys that I met over the years, but that might be something because I know from interacting with them that the people who worked on Wii Madden gave a shit. They wanted to make a very cool video game for a different audience.
Yeah,
I think they succeeded sales wise. They did not.
Right, but they tried something, which is cool.
Yep. Yeah, it's fun when people try things.
Oh, speaking of, we haven't had an episode since our FC24 review went out. And so I just want to say to everybody listening, soccer. Thank you. That is all.
I think that'll do it for this episode of Connectivity. Thank you all for listening. Send in any listener mail to connectivity@nintendoreport.com. Thank you, John. Thank you, Alex, for joining me. And we'll... Talk to you about how we don't like new Super Mario Brothers games next week.
Right. Bye. Bye.
Soccer.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.